Hello, everybody. This is Salil Tripathi from the Institute for Human Rights and Business. I'm in Kampala in Uganda with Arnold, who is with the Ugandan Consortium on Corporate Accountability, which has done pioneering work in this East African country to inculcate a culture of corporate accountability. Thank you for spending time with us, Arnold. My first question is, what is the scenario for corporate accountability in Uganda? If I were to ask a company, what do you do as with regard to human rights accountability, would they know what I'm talking about?
Okay. Thank you very much, Salil. Basically, this scenario is a bit very low as it is now because It's really starting, and a number of companies don't have an awareness of how they interface with human rights. So what we are finding is that we need to create a lot of awareness and training and kind of reach out and share the experiences, but also explain what are the linkages between what they do and how they impact fundamental human rights.
So what tools do you use? The guiding principles, or what is your framework?
At the moment, the guiding principles is basically our framework, because We don't, much as we have a lot of, we have the laws, the constitution protects actually and provides for rights which non-state actors, you know, or artificial persons need to respect, you know, but when it comes to business and human rights, what we are doing largely now is literally focus on implementing or kind of popularizing the guiding principles. So it's what we have been using. It's what we normally talk about, especially When we're dealing with communities, but also looking at how we can work with the Ghana Human Rights Commission or other government agencies to see that national action plans are developed around business and human rights.
And are they receptive?
Uganda was reviewed in 2011, and one of the recommendations from the UPR process was to establish a national action plan on human rights, And that was a recommendation that the government accepted. Mm-hmm. Literally, the process started to do the national action plan, but it stalled at a certain point. So the country is being reviewed again in November this year, but that national action plan has not yet been completed. But when I was having discussions with one of the officials in the Uganda Human Rights Commission, the government is seeking an extension on that. That is still in the pipeline, and I think it would be a very good thing. But we shall move beyond that to say, okay, we have a national action plan on human rights. We need something specific on business and human rights.
Right.
So at least with the Uganda Human Rights Commission, there is a lot of push on issues to do with business and human rights. In mid this year, they put out their country guide, business and human rights Uganda country guide, which they worked on with the Danish Institute on Human Rights. So there is that reception, at least from the Human Rights Commission, which is a government independent body. So we are looking at tapping into that, but also working with the Equal Opportunities Commission, which is another government entity, to ensure that issues of business and human rights are taken seriously from the government end, but also companies come on board to ensure that in their activities there is respect and protection of human rights.
Now, you have recently completed a study which you are launching next week in the middle of September here in Kampala. Can you tell us your key findings and what is it that you learned from that?
We undertook what I would say an ambitious, study, a baseline study, because we're coming off from zero and wanted to see the state of corporate accountability in Uganda. So we did an audit. We relied on the ICA and Danish Institute Human Rights Toolkit to kind of look at the audit of the legal framework, but also went in communities. We looked at the extractive industry, the mining industry, and stone quarrying, talking to communities about their experiences with companies operating in those areas. One of the key findings really was a number of times the legal framework, employment laws do not protect some of these people on the ground that work. So you find there were so many casual laborers that are looked at casual laborers that tend to work in these dangerous areas with no contract, but also with no form of protective gear. Especially this was so evident in the northern part of the country, where there is gold, limestone, and marble mining, among other minerals, where people use rudimentary tools, no protective gear, in scorching sun, no water, crushed stones that companies come and buy at very, very meager resources, and they kind of enlarge in that.
These are Ugandan companies or international companies?
These are Ugandan companies, because we have companies that have been for years here, but also we have companies that come in and, you know, they kind of register here as local companies, but they have their parent companies somewhere mm-hmm. else. So there's a mix of those. So what is very, very evident is that there's a lot of economic exploitation in most of these areas. The multinational companies in, let's say, the extractive industry are very much different. They tend to, because they have policies and codes of conduct from their parent company that they implement here. But the semi-local companies tend to massively exploit the communities. They sign concessions, they sign agreements with communities to provide, under the disguise of corporate social responsibility, that they don't fulfill, but also go ahead to continuously violate and abuse these communities.
So you were saying something interesting earlier when we were talking about how the quarrying, mining and oil and extractive companies were happy to listen to you, but other industries were not so keen to talk about. Can you explain why? I mean, do you have any explanation for that?
Is there
financial institutions,
yes,
and other consumer product companies and so,
yes,
on?
There are historical companies that actually do interact with communities,
right,
in their operations, like you've noted, the extractive industry, the mining industry, the stone quarrying. Their activities impact directly on the communities, either the environment, the land, and the people. So those tend to have a very clear understanding of what they need to do, even when they don't do it sometimes, but they need to do, because they also interact with the National Environment Management Authority that requires them to do environmental impact assessments and audits. So there is that clear understanding of what they need to do in their operations. So those tend to take up some mechanisms of dealing with human rights issues. The challenges we got where we're dealing with, let's say, companies in the telecom industry or banking sector or, education, private partnerships, those don't see how human rights directly,
mm-hmm,
inform them. So we found it extremely hard getting even interviews with some of these companies, because they were like, we have our internal policies, we have contracts, we, give our employees their right, leave and all kinds of things. So they didn't think those are broader human rights issues that interface business and human rights as our project was operating. And so there is need. But we see the challenge bit of it all is that their parent companies, some of them have clear understanding of these principles, but the locals don't. Because when you talk about companies, let's say like Barclays Bank has clear policies, internal codes of conduct. They are members of the UN Global Compact. So when you find it kind of very shocking, where you find that their local company, Barclays Bank Uganda, does not see how human rights is an issue.
Right.
So it is. That was the kind of the irony of it all, that you find some of these companies, telecom, banking, education, private sectors, health practitioners,
mm-hmm,
like, yes, we do, we know, we deal with people and stuff, but it's not human rights, as you say,
yes,
that with the, like, oil companies and stone quarry.
Mining companies.
So that was a bit of the challenge.
Right.
And I know we managed to get, I think, one interview with one telecom company, and it was because probably I knew the person there. So, but it's been the questionnaire, because we had a questionnaire we shared, and kept on saying, but this doesn't deal with us, because the baseline study we did, the research we did, had four targets, respondents. We had the companies themselves, we had the civil society organizations working on these issues, then we had the state norm, set organs, regulator and standard setting, and then the communities that are affected. So they all had different questionnaires that we would administer,
mm-hmm,
or have the interviews. And these telecom companies and banking feel like asking them about questions that were clear on policies they are put in place for remedies or mechanisms or complaint systems, or they feel like this doesn't deal with us, because ours are clear. We have, you get a contract, you have a supervisor. If you have a problem, you report to the supervisor.
Yeah.
So it was in that kind of angle. And that's where we feel there's more work need to be done to raise this awareness and actually understand that in today's globalized world, the intersection or the interface between business and human rights in all sectors is very slim, because,
right,
you're dealing with all kinds of people. You're dealing with issues that go beyond just labor.
Mm-hmm.
They deal with gender issues. You're dealing with minority, either disability or structure. So it's like it doesn't have to go into the historical understanding,
mm-hmm,
of human rights and business in form of the environment and land and the degradation and pollution.
Yeah.
So that's where we're trying to go to understand that it's kind of a broader area.
One final question is about, you know, who do we reach out to when we do this work? Because I imagine that, like most developing countries, when you have large corporations, they only employ a small number of people in the country. And I would imagine that you have a very large informal sector. So can you talk a little bit about that?
You're right. Uganda has a very large informal sector that, unfortunately, is not very...
What is the proportion?
...protected. It's about 85%.
85%.
...of the employee workforce is not within the formal sector, which they say covered by the Employment Act.
Yeah.
So, or the National Social Security Fund, where the pension scheme falls. Also, you find a lot of protections, labor-related protections that the legal framework provides do not cater for those.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they are the majority. Another issue that actually is very, very worrying right now is the issue of the minimum wage, because we do not have... Uganda's minimum wage is about $2, and that's something that was set like in 1986.
Okay, 30 years.
So
as long as President Museveni is in power.
Oh, well, yeah. And it's one of the issues that actually we are raising
yes.
that the government needs to take very seriously.
Yes.
There is a minimum wage bill that is before Parliament that they need to keenly discuss and pass quickly to protect that, because that is also an issue that affects that 85% mm-hmm. population. So... until we have clear and legal frameworks that actually can push and empower that 85% to know that in cases of violations here or issues that arise in my labor work, I have a recourse here. So it is that kind of area that we need to tap into to say 85% of the population is a big number
yes.
to not be protected. But also it does affect the, you know, the national economy
yeah.
growth in one way or the other, because these are people that are not required by the law to either contribute to, you know, pay as you earn in taxes or, you know, all these other areas that you find the small, less than 10%
mm-hmm.
that pays, you know, annual returns to the National Social Security Fund, monthly payments, pay as you earn, are not really covered by that broader force.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an area we're trying to push, and one of the issues that we'll be raising a lot during the coming UPR process for Uganda in November, because the issue of the minimum wage is a recommendation we are making for governments to kind of look at it and say, you know, enough, it's just too late.
Yeah. No. You're a very full agent and a lot of hard work ahead. All the very best to you, and do stay in touch, and let's hope we can work together. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you.